Hey, everybody, before we get to my guest this weekend, I'm going on the road doing stand-up. This coming weekend, April 22nd, 23rd, I'm going to be in Edmonton, Canada at Rick Bronson's The Comic Strip Comedy Club. So if you're in Edmonton, come on out, check out a show. If not, fly up. I'm worth it. Bring a hat. I think it might be chilly up there. Or May 5th to the 7th, I'm going to be in Royal Oak, Michigan, just outside of Detroit at the Comedy Castle. Great club. Go there every year. Come on out. Or June 2nd to the 4th, I'm going to be at Comics Comedy Club in Mohegan Sun. Go to paulmercurio.com for tickets. Hope to see you. Should be fun.
It kind of happened for me in a very strange way. I failed. There's no other way to put it. I failed at some things that I thought I was going to succeed at. And was disappointed, and out of that disappointment, I sort of found my way into acting. That's the best way to word it, I think. I was an athlete. I went to college to play football, and I ended up realizing I didn't want to play anymore. And then it made me question, why am I at college? And then I didn't want to be what my dad was, not because I didn't like my dad, but because I just didn't want to do it. And I really sort of found my way to acting. I'm so much more suited for it. It's, acting is nothing but being a kid and not growing up, learning how to,
right. And it's sort of, put on.
It really is. And working in a cubicle at a bank didn't seem like something I wanted to do. No offense, no disrespect to anybody that does it, but I just couldn't.
All right. That was, this week's guest, Robert Patrick, talking about how he got into acting, as a result of failing at something else. Really interesting conversation with him. Loved having him on the show. He's iconic in the roles that he's played on Terminator 2, Die Hard. He's in a great new series on HBO Max, Peacemaker, and just a really nice guy and a really great perspective on life. I think you're going to really enjoy the conversation. Before we get to the full interview, I'm getting tired of having to talk to people, especially when I don't feel like talking to anybody, and especially somebody I don't know well. So I've started to wear a welding helmet in public, and I highly recommend it because you have the helmet up and it says, hey, go ahead, feel free to talk. And then when I'm done talking to somebody from my side of things where I just want to end the conversation, best way to deal with it, you don't have to be awkward. You just flip the helmet down, walk away. You're basically telling them, can't talk anymore, got to go weld. Telling you, worked great. Saves a lot of time in my life, and I don't have to have inane conversations with stupid people anymore. All right. Enjoy Robert Patrick. Great conversation with him. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. My guest this week, a amazing actor that you've seen in pretty much everything. You know him from Terminator 2, Judgment Day, Die Hard, X-Files, Sopranos, Walk the Line, an amazing actor. And his latest project is the HBO Max original series Peacemaker. He's one of the stars. It's Robert Patrick. Hey, it's great to have you on the show.
Hey, Paul, it's great to be on your show, buddy.
And I hear you're an LA Rams fan. Is that right?
I am an LA Rams fan. I was born in Atlanta, Georgia in 1966. I was at the first game of the Atlanta Falcons, but then we moved to Boston, and then we moved back, and we moved to Dayton, Detroit, and Cleveland. And you couldn't really stay with your hometown team. Then I moved to LA, and there's no team for several years. It's like 20 years. There's no NFL team in LA. And finally, we get the LA Rams. And lo and behold, I jumped on, and I'm a big LA Rams fan, a season ticket holder, and I'm super thrilled about Sean McVay and the team they put together. We got the talent.
You got quite the quarterback. Now, I was going to ask you about why'd y'all move so much when you were a kid, and how long did you live in Boston? Because I grew up in Rhode Island, so I'm an all Boston fan. So I'm a Patriots fan. Sorry about that. And
that's okay. When I lived in Boston, my dad went to MIT. My dad was a really smart guy, and we went to MIT. We moved up there from Atlanta, Georgia. It was 1967, 68, somewhere around there. I was about 10 years old. Jimmy Longboard, Collier Skremski.
Yeah, there you go.
But they were not the New England Patriots. They were the Boston Patriots. And they were a great team.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, this back in the day, Paul, where you didn't have DirecTV and you didn't know if you'd ever go back to Atlanta again. So why did you, you know, stay rooting for the home team?
Right. So did you guys travel so much? Absolutely. It's a really good point. I didn't think of that. It's a whole different, you know, if I'm in LA, I mean, I like to listen to Boston sports radio. So if I'm in LA and out there for doing a project or whatever, I'm based in New York right now, but I'll just pull up the WEEI sports app on my phone and I'm listening to in real time Boston sports talk. So yeah, it's a really good point. It's a different time. It's a totally different time back then.
It's a totally different time. And you know, I had my certain players that I loved and everything, but it was hard to stay in touch with them. It was hard to follow what was going on in baseball. And, you know, so I would move. We moved to Detroit and I became a Tigers fan. It was like I wanted to be a part of the hometown team.
Yeah.
You want to be a part of that. And it was hard to stay loyal to teams. I admire these people that, you know, they're from Kansas City and they move out to L.A. They've been living in L.A. for 40 years, but they still love the Kansas City Chiefs. Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
But not for me. For me, it was like, I want to be a part of my hometown. And I wanted to take my son to games. And, you know, I wanted to be a part of that hometown spirit. And that's the way we approach it.
My son and I bonded a lot over the years, going to Red Sox games and Patriots games and Celtics games. It's a big, big part of our life.
How old is your boy?
My boy is 21. It's crazy. Their voice gets deep. I remember his, like, I don't know, he must have been 17 or 18. And I called his phone and it went like in a split second, life changed because he picked up the phone and it was like, hello. And I'm like, is my wife sleeping with somebody? Who's picking up that phone? Right. And it was him. And then all of a sudden he's like almost, I'm like average height, 5'9", 5'10". He's like 6'1", totally a man now. It's crazy. Isn't it crazy how fast it goes?
Oh, it's amazing. I think I can still remember the day my boy was born. And he's off in Boston now at Boston Conservatory, Berklee School of Music.
Yeah.
He's there going to college and got his girlfriend and all his friends there. And it is amazing. They grow up so fast. And the NFL and sports is a big part of a father-son relationship. And that's why L.A. not having a professional football team for so many years was it was really a crime. You know, we got a population of almost 20 million.
Yeah.
And now we got two.
Yeah.
We got the Chargers. Take your pick.
Yeah, exactly. You got the, and then on basketball, you got the Lakers and the Clippers. You guys are loaded.
And the Lakers.
You got Angels. And so did you, was it hard as a kid, like moving around so much? Was it because your dad was a professor or something and he was teaching in different places? And how do you make friends? And how hard was that? Because you bounced around a lot.
Well, actually, my father wasn't a professor. He was a very smart man. When we were at MIT, he was getting his master's degree. He was in banking and finance and management, and he started out in the aerospace industry. And during the Vietnam War, the big C-5A was produced by Lockheed Aircraft Corporation. My father didn't think that financially, he just felt like he wanted to get out of the aerospace industry, so he got into banking and you know, a young man, I was his oldest boy. I think he had graduated from Virginia Tech. I think about it, you know, like being born in the 50s, the late 50s, and raised in the 60s, such a tumultuous time, so much transition. But a new thing happened, you know. You didn't have to just live and be born and raised and stay in your hometown. You could move around. You could, if you were an executive, you were being, recruited for different jobs. So you moved all over the United States of America.
Yeah.
And it was a heck of a way to grow up. One thing that it did, it benefited me as an actor because constantly meeting people and constantly introducing myself to people and making new friends and brought me out of my shell, so to speak, and made you a little bit more gregarious than someone that didn't move around as much. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's got to help when you're going in front of a bunch of strangers and performing for them. You're so exposed as a performer. I mean, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, I had a career in finance. I was a lawyer and investment banker on Wall Street, and then I quit to go into performing, acting, comedy, stand-up. And I work on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert now. So, I mean, I know what that's like to be in that world and then move out of that world into another world. And it's definitely an adjustment. And what I admire about you is like you had a calling for acting like in college, like you just kind of left college and said, I'm going to go for this, right? Was that acting something
well,
that was like...
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Paul. It kind of happened for me in a very strange way. I failed. There's no other way to put it. I failed at some things that I thought I was going to succeed at, and was disappointed. And out of that disappointment, I sort of found my way into acting. That's the best way to word it, I think. I was an athlete. I went to college to play football, and I ended up realizing I didn't want to play anymore. And then it made me question, why am I at college? And then I didn't want to be what my dad was, not because I didn't like my dad, but because I just didn't want to do it. And I really sort of found my way to acting. I'm so much more suited for it. It's, you know, acting is nothing but being a kid and not growing up, you know, learning how to.
Right. And it's sort of, put on.
It
some...
really is. And working in a cubicle at a bank didn't seem like something I wanted to do. No offense, no disrespect to anybody that does it, but I just couldn't.
Yeah. So what was it? How did the acting come out? Did you just start to sort of do some school plays and like, what was
well,
it?
I had done a play when I was in elementary school, and third grade in Marietta, Georgia. I'd done a play. I played Peter Pan. I was the lead. I loved the attention. I loved pretending. I loved getting up and performing in front of people. And, you know, like all of us when we were little kids, we used to play army and cowboys and Indians, all that kind of stuff. We were influenced by what we saw on the television, and we played all these. Parts. Who knew that it would grow into a thing where, you know, you really start studying the human condition and presenting yourself in these characters?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It evolves into, I can make a living at this. And it's actually really healthy. It's a catharsis, you know, to a certain degree. Playing out evil people, what's it like to be super good. There's all sorts of techniques and artistic parts of being an actor. Are you super comedic? Are you wonderful, funny? What are you, more dark, dramatic? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
There's so many nuances and levels to it that it's constantly asking you questions and makes you super excited.
And you like that. It's hard to get bored. I mean, have you, and we'll talk about Peacemaker in just a second, but you've done such amazing work over a long period of time.
Thank you. You're very great. I'm grateful that you say that. I appreciate it.
Well, you sent me money to say that. Let's pretend like that wasn't it. you sent me two tickets to an LA Rams game. You said any game, just say
yeah,
nice
did,
things.
There you go.
No, but
Super
I'm,
Bowl tickets.
Exactly.
Too.
So what
a
do you,
fool.
You know, you're talking about, yeah, I know you should have held back on the Super Bowl. What is the, like, the you know, I act as well. The thing I love about acting versus, and I also do stand up, is it's, I like the collaboration, and I love that feeling that a group of people are creating something out of nothing. But you've acted for so long at such a high level and in a myriad of roles. Was there an aha moment for you in your acting trajectory where you're kind of going like, oh, okay, I really get this now, or I moved to another level? Because you mentioned like, you are always kind of learning and exploring new things and doing character breakdowns and character studies for your roles. But what has it been like for you in that sort of trajectory? And was there a moment or two where you're like, I don't know, I know you worked with Roger Corman early on, and I'm curious what that was like. Was there anything in particular where you go, this was a real creative turning point for me?
Well, it's so layered. It's really deep. To me, you know, to have the faith to go out and try to be artistic and create art and try to pursue a career takes a certain amount of chutzpah on anybody's part to expose yourself and make yourself vulnerable to rejection and critique from other people is you know, it's it's very dangerous kind of a thing, but to be attracted to that and say that this is what you want to do and then get the opportunity to do it. And then you dealing with your own inner turmoil as a human being. Am I good enough for this? Can I do this? I don't want to compare myself to other people, but you know, blah blah blah. You know, you've got all this struggle going on.
Yep.
And then you try to apply it, and then you try to learn. And there's a technique to acting, and there's a technique to film acting, and how do you convince yourself that you are this person you are? And how do you believe it and sell that to everybody here? And, you know, there's so many layers to it. I just find it fascinating, the whole process. And I think when I did The Sopranos, you know, I had all sorts of stuff going on. Am I a good actor? How good am I? Am I as good as that guy? God, I be as good as I can. What can I do to be better? How can I get better? And then you get an opportunity to do The Sopranos, and you're in there working with Jimmy Gandolfini and all these great guys, and you're wondering, wow, I wonder if I cut the, you know, I can stand up to these guys. I wonder if I can play in this arena. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's almost like an athlete. It's all, you know, like my admiration for stand-up comedians, my God, you know, people realize that, the amount of preparation that you guys have to go through. Plus, you have to be smart. You know,
yeah.
You got to have a brain, man. You got to be able. It's got to be interesting, and people want to go on a journey, and I think a great comedian can do that. You can take people off on this great story, this great journey.
Yeah, and
I admire. I think that that's. What are you tell me, what's that like to get up on stage like that and try to be funny? I mean, you know?
Well, I always say if my mother hugged me two more times, I wouldn't be a comedian. But, you know. You know, there's
I
definitely,
can't do that. That's why I admire you comedians so well. Because you're always looking for that joke. And I get too serious. You know what I mean? I can't find the joke in everything.
I think the key is that I have to connect to the material. Otherwise, you're not going to connect to it. So, like, I've got to care about it. And because that will come through. I mean, I think audiences are very emotionally smart. Whether you're acting, whether you're a musician, whether you're a comedian, and intuitively they're very, very smart. So they know, like, within a couple of minutes if you're good, not good, full of shit. Like, they know, right? They just know.
Right.
And so you can't fake it. You can come out and look good or whatever. And then the material conveys a certain amount of things. I think the material, in my mind, in stand-up, is really a vessel through which people get to know you as a person in your point of view, right? So the material should be good. But for me, it's really about a relationship. I'm walking into a room and I want to break the room down in a sense of like, well, this really isn't a show. We're just kind of hanging out. In fact, I did an off-Broadway show that I had to close because of COVID because I like to talk to the audience. And I was getting these amazing stories from people, just regular people, because literally everybody has a story. And if you give them the opportunity to tell it, there's stories that were just incredible. And so I created Frank Oz, who I'm sure you know, great director, and created the Muppets with Jim Henson. He consulted with me on the show and helped me develop it. And I would just randomly pick people and bring them on stage and talk to them. And the stories we were getting were incredible. And
what an experience that must have been.
Yeah, and I want to do it in LA. And if I do, I'd love to get in touch with you and love to have you come see it. And I think
absolutely.
You'd really like it.
I would love to do that. Well, you know, I have these, there are these fan convention things that have sprung up over the last couple of decades where people go and they got a chance to meet some of these iconic actors that they've known in different shows and whatnot. And every once in a while they do these panel questions, you know, like, you know, like Comic Cons and stuff like that. And you do these Q&As. And I got to tell you, I enjoy it. In my own little fantasy world, I do see myself being kind of a stand-up comic, getting in there and breaking down the room and engaging with the audience and trying to be humorous. But nothing scripted, you know, just sort of off the cuff and kind of do. And, when it works, it's great. You know, when you've got a connection with the audience, as you said, and I think that's the most important part.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about Peacemaker for a minute. You play John Cena is the lead. He is the peacemaker, really complicated character, and you play his father, Augie Smith, which has kind of been described as Archie Bunker on steroids, which I love, and you know, Cena said something about your. In sort of reading up on this a bit, that the creator Gunn said, you know, through his relationship with his father, you get to really understand Cena, the main character, more, and you have a complicated relationship with your son. But there's really no arc or journey for your particular character. So how did you play that and tell people a little bit about that relationship between you, the dad, and John, the son?
Well, I think that's the genius of James Gunn and his writing. He realized early on that if Peacemaker is such an asshole, his father's got to be even worse.
Right.
And they allude to that in the film, The Suicide Squad. And so if you think he's bad, you know, they start talking about it. Do you know who his father is? And they start alluding to who I am, every one of them. You know, his father is, and then now in Peacemaker, he gets to introduce the father. So he combined two characters, White Dragon and somebody else. White Dragon from the DC comic world in the 1960s, Peacemaker, was a Nazi. So now James decided during the pandemic to make him a white supremacist, the leader of an Aryan Brotherhood. And he's a villain, but he's also an engineering genius. And we start to find out, that's the beauty of Peacemakers. We start to find out why is Chris Smith, Peacemaker, the way he is. And we see a little bit of his backstory and the relationship with the dad. So for the moment, the door knocks and he says, "Hi, Dad, it's me." You know, "Hi, Dad." And I open the door and I just kind of grunt at him. And that scene goes from there.
It's a great scene.
We shot the rehearsal, which is my favorite way to go.
Why?
I love directors that do that. What? Excuse me.
Why do you like shooting the rehearsal?
I just think it's a real heightened thing because you haven't really run the lines, you haven't rehearsed, you haven't blocked. I mean, you have. But now the stage is set, and here you're going to go, and you're going to walk out and pretend. You're going to make this believable. And
right, you're not overly rehearsed, so that it's going to come off like in real life, where people aren't rehearsed. Like people don't practice opening a door and saying hello to their son; they just open the door and say hello to their son. So you kind of, it's a way to get out of your own way as an actor, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, exactly. And you're a performer, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. And you kind of organically go, and then, you know, after you do the first take, you can kind of see where you want to go or what you want to isolate on and make specials of and maybe take it this way or that way. And you're reacting for the first time for free. You know, Billy Bob Thornton has directed me several times. I just played Billy Bob's father in Goliath, and we did a couple movies together, All the Pretty Horses, another one that Billy Bob wrote. He shoots the rehearsals. Clint Eastwood shoots the rehearsals. I just think it's just a neat way to go, man. I prepare my ass off because I'm, you know, the thing I don't want to do is be the guy that's fucking up.
Right.
I don't cuss on this show or not.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. No. It's.
I don't want to be the guy to drop the ball. You know, yeah. I don't want to be Matthew Stafford and throw an interception. I want to prepare. So actor prepares. prepare like crazy,
right.
You know? And so you get in there, and when you're prepared, what are you? You're confident.
When
you're confident, are you? Well, then you're just playing. You're just having.
Because you throw it out, you know? You throw the script out, and you're just in the moment, and then you can have some of those great improvised moments. Yeah, it's exactly, I'm the same way. I think it goes back to my like law school days and just prepare and 8 Ways to Sunday and have options in the back of your head. And yeah, all of that stuff. I think it frees you up though. I think it really frees you up.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, the tedious part, and you and I both know it, the tedious part is the memorization and the actual you know, nuts and bolts of putting together the character and all that kind of stuff. That stuff's struggle. You know, that's a struggle, even for great actors like Marlon Brando. I mean, he hated doing that. That's why he just started, you know, using an earwig and kind of going that way. But I personally, you know, you gotta memorize that stuff. You gotta get it in there, and you gotta have fun. You gotta be free. You gotta take the pressure off so you're relaxed. You can't do it if you're uptight. And the best way to get out, you know, what are they, you know, always game day, you know, wait until you get that first hit. You're going to calm down.
Yeah. Yep.
Right?
And then you're in it. Or, you know, Steph Curry was playing the other night and he was just cold. And then he got a layup and that just got him going. Like you just, no matter what your level of greatness is and what you do, we all need that like moment of self-confidence to then just, it's like lighting a wick and then you're off and the rocket's off, you know?
Absolutely. And when you start not getting excited and nervous and anticipation of something where, you know, you're expected to deliver, that's probably when it's time to walk away.
Yeah. So people say to me, do you get nervous before you go out to do stand up or go act? I go, yeah, just enough. And they go, what do you mean? I go, you got to be a little nervous so the juice is flowing, but not to the point where you're frozen. Like you, and if you're not nervous, then there's something wrong because, you know, you're exposed. You're going out in front of people, whether you're on a set, and even though you're in a role and in costume, it's the same thing. It's a very, like you say, you're not sitting in a cubicle pushing numbers. Nothing wrong with that. This is a different thing where you're very exposed. So I think it's natural to be nervous.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, it's wonderful to have you on. I want to do this again because there's a lot more I want to talk about, but I know you got to jump. The show is on HBO Max. It's Peacemaker. You play Archie Bunker on steroids, which I love. but I always just every time I see you in a role, I believe you. And that's a hard thing for actors to do. And you've done it for a long, long time in major roles, in very different types of roles. And you're a true artist, and I think you're great. And it's great to have you on. And I'll be rooting for your Rams, and we'll get you back on the show. Okay, Robert?
Well, anytime. It was genuinely great talking with you, and I appreciate your time, and I look forward to talking to you in the future.
All right, that was Robert Patrick. How great a guy is he? Humble, amazing actor. New series is great. Check it out, Peacemaker. Hope you guys can check me out doing stand-up this coming weekend, April 22nd, 23rd. I'll be at Rick Bronson's The Comic Strip Comedy Club in Edmonton, Canada. May 5th to the 7th, I'll be in Royal Oak, Michigan at the Comedy Castle. And June 2nd to the 4th, I will be in Comedy Club in Mohegan Sun. So hope to see you there. And thanks for checking out the podcast. And follow me on social media at Paul Mercurio. See you guys next week.